It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. I'm feeling a little better. I'm not sounding a whole lot better, but I'm feeling better, and you suffered along with me. Thank you. I went like, it was a whole week, man. It was about this time last week we started getting really sick, and I'm just, you know, just too much stuff was going on. We just couldn't stop. Just can't stop. You just can't. You got to muddle through. Make it happen. But, you know, next time I'm making sure I'm taking my vitamin C and all the other stuff, whether it's packed or not, I'm going to the health food store again. Know what I mean? Because, I mean, damn, this is whipping my butt. I just got a call today. Tomorrow we had scheduled Alan Corwin. We're talking about some of the gun laws and so on that are popping up here. And he and I have been doing some media and such on things. And we're going to, you know, he called me this morning. He said, I don't know, Ernie. I think I got what you got, man. I might not be able to make it tomorrow. So we'll know tomorrow morning, but we'll make sure he gets scheduled. If we can't do it tomorrow, we'll do it soon. The other thing's going on, I did a radio show out of Texas talking about a lot of stuff, and the nullification conference is coming up this Saturday, and you'll see it advertised on Freedom's Phoenix, and I'm supportive of anybody doing anything. I mean, you know, you go. And you have Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, is speaking. You have Thomas Woods. He's going to be talking Charles Goyette, a lot of my favorite people, but it's once more into the breach. You know, it's just we're going to assert our 10th Amendment rights as a state government. You know, we claim that, you know, who represents us is the state government. They're my leader. They're my ruler. They're going to tell the federal government that they can't rule me because I already got a ruler. You see my point? You know, I'm just like, okay. So I'm, you know, I'll support anybody, you know, who's out doing anything. We trade it out. We'll get a table there. They got us listed as a sponsor, and I didn't know that until I went and checked it today, and I go, yeah, well, you know, okay. Well, we'll get a table, and we'll promote wallet voting there and Freedom's Phoenix and a lot of stuff, and we'll make up a bunch of DVDs just like we do the tea parties and so on. We'll make sure they get a big, giant dose of us. Okay, cool. You know, we'll work it out. And and John Bush and Jason, they're coming into town. They'll be going to this thing. They'll be visiting with us Friday. So, yeah, we'll take advantage of it. We'll have a good time, and we'll get to meet a lot of people and free some minds. There'll be at least 500,000 people there. You know, so we'll do it up. But I'm telling you, you know, I get asked about this, and you know, oh yeah, with this nullification thing, we're going. Got some of the big names, man. We're going for. I'm going. I'm past that. What am I doing? I'm saying, you know, we're not going to be ruled by Washington, D.C., because I already have a ruler down at the state capitol. They're going to rep. They're my king. You see what I mean? I'm just going, really? Is that what you're advocating that I advocate? I choose not. So it's another opportunity to free some minds. And heck, you know, if everybody thinks they're all radical and extreme and all that kind of stuff, I make them look moderate, which is what a lot of has been our role over the past 20 years here in Arizona anyway. And that's something that Alan Corwin, the gun rights author that writes a lot of books and so on, done a lot of research on Supreme Court laws and so on. And he's well known. He's on CNN and Fox and stuff on a regular basis when it comes to gun issues. And he'll tell you, along with a lot of other people and organizations, groups and parties and everything here in Arizona, is that while we couldn't really be criticized for our principled stand, you know, of course we make sense, we do this principled thing, but the big criticism of a lot of the activists here in Arizona that kind of go the way Famous Phoenix does is that, well, you know, you're not going to get the sanction of some black-robed guy from the federal bench, kind of, you know, like I care. So they're looking for some kind of absolution. They're looking for some kind of agreement. They're looking for some kind of anointing. And I'm not. What happens is it makes them look more palatable. It makes them look more acceptable, less extreme, more moderate. So they are successful in getting marijuana legalized to be taxed and regulated and all this kind of stuff. You know, you don't have to have a concealed carry permit to do so. You don't have to. I mean, they have granted you that privilege, you know, kind of thing. Well, if that's the result, you know, being extreme, you know, I can live with that. And they see the benefit of it. But it wasn't for at least a decade or so that they started to see just how it was the cultural change that allowed for this to happen. So when we go to this nullification thing and the assertion of the state's 10th Amendment rights and all that kind of thing, don't you understand it would be a break of principle for me to advocate, yes, the state government and the governor's my leader, not Obama. Is that a self-rule kind of argument? No. All right, so I tell you what was going on last night. Excuse me. Yep, still getting over it. Last night, now we had just moved, made the big move from our home downtown Phoenix up to our little farmlet thing up there in North Phoenix. And still in the city limits of Phoenix, you know, a couple of acres and horses, man. I mean, you know, this is, you know, a lot of people don't know. Phoenix has a lot of diversity. Wild West and all. What happened is we moved up there and we're still unpacking everything. And just today was when we have them putting in the internet. All right, we're getting our phone, we're getting the TV and the internet and all that kind of stuff, and get, you know, Uber speed, this, that, and everything. And today's the day they're up there doing it now. So I don't have television. Well, last night was the State of the Union. I mean, you know, talk show host, man, you got to go watch State of the Union. Well, when Charles Goyette and I was producing for him, or, you know, I'm doing my show and he's doing his, or we're doing it together, you know, both of us, we're like, you know, we got to do this. I mean, you know, it's just which one, you know, we rock, paper, scissors, which one of us was going to, you know, watch it and make notations of what and kind of go over it late. You know, seriously, we just, it's the pain, regardless of who gives it. You know, you're being lied to. And if you know what's really going on and you just sit there and watch it, it's just like, wow, is this legal? You know, they have the president of the United States sit there and just lie to you. Okay. So, Barry Hess, candidate, he lives very close to me up there, with hundreds of yards, you know, away. He lives up in the same neighborhood. And he is the Libertarian candidate for governor the last three election cycles. And a good friend, he and his wife Gina, they came over and got some Boston Market and are helping us put some furniture together and so on. And we're just, you know, enjoying each other's company. And then another couple came over, you know, say, yo, what's up? And we're talking and we're like, yeah, you know, the president's address, yeah, we got internet that we can do through our phone cards. You know, we have the computers that can access through the, you know, your 4G or whatever. And I said, then we go to whitehouse.gov and we can watch it. Or we can go over to Barry's house, watch it, or we can not watch it. And, it, you know, in about half a second, everybody's like, eh, yeah, we don't care. You know, why? Why would we? Do we think they're going to, I mean, it's just, you know, something to make fun of. Well, I'll tell you, you know, the biggest reason, and it's this. I'll go watch it, you know, eventually. I'll at least read the text. I'll do something. But what I really want to do is this week, I think it's Friday, I have Brad Friedman from bradblog.com on. Now, he and I share a lot of concerns about election fraud. And election fraud is a big thing that he came in. But he is a guest host for Mike Malloy and a lot of the other hosts previously on the Air America affiliates back in the day. Very progressive. And he's a big Obama supporter. Well, I want to see what he thinks he said. And then we'll examine it and see what really happened. So I got that going for us. Plus, there's something I want to read to you when we come back. You guys stay right there. And then we got a special guest in the second hour. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hello! Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. I'm feeling better. Well, you know, we had Obama's speech last night, and we'll go over it whenever I feel like it, because, I mean, damn. Brad Friedman will be on Friday. By then, you know, maybe I'll go over it, maybe I won't, but, you know, he'll give his spiel on it. Because I'll tell you one thing, Brad Friedman had him on, and he would really go after us libertarians, man. He'd say, yeah, see, Obama didn't go after your guns yet, did he? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, come on. He goes, yeah, no, he's not after your guns. I'm like, well, we'll see. Did he say something about last night? I don't know. You know, maybe he did, maybe he did. Doesn't matter what he says anyway. Blah, 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 blah. I don't believe anything. You know, and it's a distraction from so much stuff that's really going on now. And I'll go ahead and let it kind of settle and everybody talk about it and whatever and let Brad get his mind right and everything and have him on for an hour Friday morning. And I'll just let him go. And then, you know, we'll see. But I want to share some things with you, what's really going on now that's of real importance that I guarantee, without even watching it, guarantee was not mentioned, right? Let me go ahead and give you some goodie here. Get my glasses on. Now, this is stories that we have on Freedom's Phoenix, okay? You go up there and you'll see, you know, got all this goodie just today. All right. Global insiders warned... U.S. debt crisis could explode at any time. Global insiders are starting to gather in Davos, Switzerland for this week's World Economic Forum. J.P. Morgan Chase's Jamie Obama's favorite banker, Diamond, will be, Diamond, will be there as well as Treasury Secretary Geithner. When attendees arrive and check in, they will be given their badges and a copy of a special Davos magazine prepared especially for the event. In the magazine will be an article by Robert Rubin. He is an insider's insider. Participants will read the article. Rubin is so wired in that when insiders think of the people who are operating behind a president, it is names like Rubin that comes to mind. Excuse me. Jacob Liu, the new director of the Office of Management and Budget, is connected to Rubin. The old director of OMB, Office of Management and Budget, Peter Orszag, was connected to Rubin. The new head of the National Economic Council, Gene Sperling, is connected to Rubin, as was the previous NEC head, Larry Summers. It goes on. Rubin served as Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton. He was former co-CEO of Goldman Sachs. He is co-chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. Got the idea? Insiders will read what he has written. So, this, I mean, no, here, the insider to the insiders, here's the insider scoop. The first part of the article is about what the United States needs to do to get the economy going. It is a desperate shot taken at the buzzer from beyond half court. Rubin knows this. He is also a Keynesian, so his recommendations call for more spending that he hopes can be reversed in 2 or 3 years. Once the economy gets going, it won't work. The shot will fall short of the rim. The second part of the article is much more significant. It is the breakdown of what is going wrong in the United States. An abbreviated version of the Davos warning has been printed in Financial Times. Now, this is from the Economic Policy Journal. Excuse me. Rubin wrote, "The risks of our fiscal position are serious and multiple. And while these risks become more severe over time as our debt position worsens, all of these either have begun to materialize or could do so in the near term. So we should act now." What multiple shape could the crisis take? Rubin writes to Davos insiders, "To be specific about the risk, deficits could crowd out private investment. which could choke off a private investment recovery. Moreover, the capacity for public investment is already diminishing and could be exacerbated by growing entitlement costs and mounting interest payments. Most dangerously, there is a risk of disruption to our bond and currency markets from the fear of much higher interest rates due to future imbalances or from fear of inflation because of efforts to monetize our debt. The result could be significant deficit premiums on bond market interest rates, seriously impeding private investment and growth, or worse, acute bond market declines that cause an economic crisis. This could also start in the currency markets. While the likelihood of major market disruptions is greater in the intermediate and longer term, the shorter term risks are also real. Market psychology can change unexpectedly and dramatically, either on its own or because of some catalyst, when underlying conditions are unsound. Possible catalysts are a debt ceiling confrontation, currency market problems, and state deficits. For emphasis, I remind you, this is a former Treasury Secretary of the United States writing, one of President Obama's top outside advisors. So does Rubin think there is an easy solution to the debt problem? He writes, growing out of our fiscal morass over time without policy action would require inconceivable rates of growth. Money muddling through with unexpectedly favorable developments is extremely unlikely. The strong probability is that either we make the hard decisions so vital to our future, or we will be forced at some point to act more harshly and with less time to thoughtfully set priorities. Our long history of political and economic resilience should augur well. But these decisions are extremely difficult, and the question is whether we have the political will to face up to what we must do. Well, there you have it, from a man as inside as you can get. He goes on to say, our structural fiscal trajectory is unsustainable with multiple serious risks, while at the same time our large cyclical deficits are exacerbating debt levels and interest costs, et cetera, et cetera. Bottom line, the United States is in serious financial and economic trouble. It is only a matter of time before the crisis explodes. Don't take my word for it. Just reread what the former Treasury Secretary has to say. It's all there. Okay, now I brought this up because this is the inside insiders and the boys. Okay, they're going to Davos, Switzerland. They're sitting around. Oh, how are we going to? Yeah, we're going to rule the planet. All right. While he's given the State of the Union address, these guys are meeting knowing it's done. It's so freaking over. And what's their main concerns? Well, they talk about them. He mentions them, you know, like the state deficits and such. They're going to come out. The big thing that they say is the capacity for public investment is already diminishing. They just can't keep printing more money and give out more bailouts and more. I mean, they can and they will. You know, as long as they think they can get away with it. But that's what drives gold and silver prices up. That's what drives commodities up. That's, you know, the inflation part. We're just now starting to feel the inflationary effects of them expanding the monetary supply before. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago. It's going to get stupid. So now they're looking at, you know, how can we save this? They don't say. They just need to act aggressively. Aggressive expansion. It's like the Joker. Wow. We'll talk about more when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, you know, I'm looking at this article, and I just, there's some things that, you know, they'll put in here, tell you what, this is the insiders to the insiders being all insidey, okay? And they're saying that, you know, we're not going to have deficits could crowd out private investment. You think? You know, this is, it's so bad and it's so obvious that I'm wondering what it is that they're going to advocate. They're going to nationalize the economy. They already did with the TARP. That's why we made such a big deal when John Chadwick did the brought the TARP back and they $700 billion. You know, that week's check, and it was nationalizing the economy, saving the banks, doing all this kind of stuff. You know, then they came back later and they did another big giant stimulus. You know, and they gave it to the states, and then they're going to run out of that money by the end of the spring, February. They're going to come out with reports on the pension funds and everything. That's going to be, you know, bankrupt. We have Social Security that's done. You know, at what point do you get to the point where you're going, it's over, man? You know, it's over. So what do we have now? We have them replacing Volcker, which kind of, you know, a lot of people would make the argument he saved a dollar by increasing interest rates back in the early part of the first Reagan administration. And he comes on, give him some street cred, and we're going to whatever, get rid of him. They bring in the CEO of General Electric, and they're shipping jobs off all over the place. You know, the globalists are in charge. And a globalist of what? You know, is it economic globally? Is it politically globally? Environmental globally? It's all globally. It's a global of we rule you because they think they can. Well, let's go ahead, and there's another article that, see if I can find it here real quick, that I wanted to read, and it really explains what I think the situation is when we go to these various different functions, and you'll be, you know, a Tea Party thing and so on, and it's oftwominds.com, and it was a guest article, somebody, a correspondent, Eric A., you know, you can say who it is, had wrote this, and he's going on about Charles Hugh Smith's cry in the wilderness for individual solutions as public policy fixes are impossible, focuses on individual solutions to our present crisis. I'm stuck by the Kubler-Ross model, you know, the one where it says denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, you know, as you're dying, you know, you're diagnosed with, you're dying, you're no, I'm not, you know, denial. Then you get angry, you know, then you start bargaining, you know, then you get depression and acceptance. Well, this is kind of where a lot of the people are now. You know, the anger part's going to start hitting. We're still heavy in this denial thing. Denial, 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 denial. It's going to get to where it's anger. And then they're going to start negotiating. They're going, okay, well, where do I got to line up? What do I got to sign? What do I got to do? You know, what new currency do I got to accept? After the holiday, bank holiday, you know, we'll do the world, though. Then it'll be okay. I'll sign up here. You know, give me my check in. You know, as long as my Social Security comes in some denomination I get to go buy bread with, kind of, we'll be bargaining. You know, then it's not going to work, and they'll be kind of all depressed and, you know, moping, jumping off bridges or whatever. And then it'll be acceptance by many, not by all. Let's go ahead and read this. I think this is very instructive. She doesn't say how long each stage takes, but in a body the size of a nation, it must take a very long time indeed. Is there anybody out there who doesn't know the financial system is broken, that home prices need to fall at least 30%, if not 50% more, that Social Security is already in deficit, that they won't be retiring in the manner in which they've desired? And the solutions? Oh, the solutions. More borrowing, more lending, more spending, more lying, cheating, and stealing, more government orders, more expansion, more of everything we've done that got us here. Is there anyone who doesn't know you can't solve a debt and spending problem with debt and spending? So why is it still going on? This is the wonder of denial, of lying to ourselves, or in the American parlance, of bullshit. Bullshit is different from lying in that it isn't technically untrue, but it's effectively untrue. Second requirement is that it's invariably selling something, getting you to do something for the bullshitter, power or money. Third is that everyone knows that it's bullshit. They know it's a lie, but they're willing to be complicit in the lie anyway, for their own reasons. Like all cons, bullshit can never work without the complicit help of the so-called victim. The only reason all these things can still go on is denial. Why? I was at a Tea Party meeting, I know, I've already admitted it, where one of the participants asked, are you willing to give up Social Security? What? I asked stupidly. If you cut these taxes and reduce government, it'll end Social Security. I want to know who here is willing to have their own check cut. I stared, staggered at the obviousness of the simple statement. Sir, I stuttered, it's already gone. There is no Social Security. You'd be lucky to get checks for even two more years. My words did not compute, so I let it slide, turning to other subjects. The unsustainable nature of the numbers surrounding Social Security and Medicaid have been obvious since the baby boom generation was done being born in 1966. The scam was fully apparent by at least the non-restructuring of withholdings with the Greenspan-Boskin Commission in 1983, and at least by 1984, as even the increased revenues were spent with nothing saved. It would be self-evident that it wouldn't matter in any case, since an entire nation cannot buy special pixie dust through its whole life without driving the price up. Not stocks, not bonds, not even gold, and then sell it through their whole retirement without driving the price of that asset back down to zero again. That is, you can't all put $10 into a hat and have everyone pull $20 back out. That's what Social Security, 401k privatization, the stock market, investors all propose to do. Since 1983, there have been commissions every few years, headlines in every major newspaper, including most recently G.W. Bush's front page quote, "There is no trust fund." I mean, exactly what kind of warning were you looking for? Do they have to come to your house and shake you by the ankles? Moving into the new decade, we find ourselves with a $1.6 trillion deficit per year and the now common knowledge that Social Security doesn't exist. It's just a budget item that is paid like any other through borrowing. Borrowing on top of that $1.6 trillion per year, and you still think that you have something to lose? That there's the slightest chance Social Security will be paid. And I'm not following the arcana of the way governments reliably overpromise and default in history from Weimar to France. The close examples of Russia in 1997 and Argentina in 2001, that in 1776, Adam Smith had already declared no government ever pays off their debts. Or any of the other second-level study that is easily found. Now, that's denial. Denial kills. So what's my point with this? Would you rather, as with New Jersey Governor Christie, be told that there is no money in the known universe to pay what is owed in pensions, on bonds, in stocks, or in real goods, and thereby be able to adjust your life accordingly? Or would you rather, like GM union workers and Enron employees, wake up one day and find that you have no pension whatsoever, but since you didn't expect it, lose both house and pension at 70 because you haven't saved on your own either? Well, that goes on, but you get the point. You know, it's over. It's so already over. What do you do about it? You keep breathing in and out. And that's what we're going to try and help you do here on Declare Your Independence on a Freedom's Phoenix. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Time for here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, here in Phoenix, Arizona. How about some truth, justice? What used to be the American way, wherever that was, we're going to redefine it. We're going to redefine it we all want to be leave me aloneist. I'm a leave me aloneist. Yep, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I just want to go through some of the stories here, build up to our guest at the top of the hour. Our guest is going to be talking to us about Bradley Manning. Now, Bradley Manning is in a unique situation, and this gentleman is in a unique situation to be able to help us understand what's going on and what to expect in the future. And I just give you some of his bio here. I mean, he's a Central Intelligence Agency for a long time. In fact, he was commander of the facility where Bradley Manning is being held right now. So he wrote a letter to the present commander saying, hey, man, you know, what the heck is an Army guy doing in a Marine base anyway? You know, is that standard? And so, you know, we'll go ahead and introduce him a little bit later, but it'll definitely be worth you guys staying tuned for that. For Bradley Manning, the gentleman that is accused of getting all of the information that was provided to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and those guys. Now, the thing is some of the story is, they can't find a link between the two. Now, they would love to, you know, for whatever reason, somebody gets prosecuted for something. But they're trying to make Julian Assange out to be like he's a spy or something. No, he's the Washington Post or the New York Times character in this as it pertained to the Pentagon Papers. You know, they weren't the ones that got it. They were the ones that published it. And then the court ruling in that later on was that, you know, people had a right to know, I guess. I guess it's okay until it's not okay. And who gets to decide? And how consistent is this? I mean, it's just, this is going to play out, and we'll see what happens. So that'll be an interesting conversation we'll have in the next hour. Now, just some of the stories. You know, this one here, Chicago police, tape us, get sentenced to 15 years in prison. You know, they don't like this. And now this has something to do with what's going on now is that there has been 11 cops were shot nationwide in 24 hours. And they're making a big deal out of this because, they didn't have anything to do with one another. But the law enforcement and the media, certainly, wanted, and governments and so on, wanted to give the impression that government's under attack, the people are resisting. Well, they may, but that's not really what I see is happening. You create the kind of you get stopped for a traffic ticket, and depending on how many traffic tickets you got, or how much marijuana you got under the seat, or Lord forbid you have the wrong kind of gun, or, I mean, all of a sudden you're looking at serious time, and you got to make a decision. You know, am I going to go in a cage for this, or am I going to fight my way out? Am I going to resist? Am I going to? And you know, a lot of times that's what happens. You just build on top of, you know, people that are on the fringe, either financially or even emotionally or intellectually, and you just put this kind of pressure on them. You know, the mind canaries start flopping over, and it's happening nationwide. I'm shocked it's taken this long, to be honest. You know, I just, if you just leave people alone, you wouldn't have these problems. So that's what they're talking about there. And, you know, when you start trying to protect your rights and recording it, you're saying, hey, I'm just, you know, like what Morpheus did a couple weeks ago. You know, the officer comes up and he goes, why are you videotaping me? You know, protect my rights. You know, because I'm afraid because what you might do. I mean, you know, because I can't. Well, in Chicago, they don't want you doing it, and they're going to get you. And this one gentleman has been charged. It the same sentence for videotaping cops. I think it was they didn't without their knowledge or something like that. And I don't know what the criteria was, but it's the same sentence for attempted murder. Oh, ho. And it's one thing, we had a gentleman that was a police trainer in the academy that was in studio a couple weeks ago. And he was saying when they go in on a crime scene, when they see somebody with a gun, they yell, gun, 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 whether they got drawn or not. Well, they do the same thing in the same way as somebody has a camera. Camera, camera, camera. Because they're maybe even more afraid of the camera. So let's go through a couple of other stories here real quick. Google comes under fire for secret relationship with the NSA. Consumer Watchdog, an advocacy group largely focused on recent years on Google's privacy practices, has called on a congressional investigation into the internet giant's cozy relationship with U.S. President Barack Obama's administration. In a letter sent Monday, Consumer Watchdog asked Representative Daryl Issa, the new chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, to investigate the relationship between Google and several government agencies. The group asked Issa to investigate contracts at several U.S. agencies for Google technology and services, the secretive relationship between Google and the U.S. National Security Agency, and the company's use of a U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration airfield in California. Now, if you read more about this and so on, it starts to, what'd you expect was going to happen? And the same thing, we went through this in the 90s with Microsoft. Either you play ball with us, or Janet Reno and friends come in and they do all kind of antitrust stuff, and they went after them and they sued them, and they go. And up until that time, Microsoft didn't have a lobbyist in Congress. They weren't doling out money to legislators. They're busy selling, Microsoft, Windows and operating systems. But what happened was, after this, all of a sudden, we need to be having us an office in Washington, D.C. That's what happened. You start getting involved in all kinds of your politically correct and your connected buddy stuff, and you start doling out the money, because that's just the way they roll, because they got the force of a shiny badge and a gun. And to think it wasn't going to happen to Google and any and everybody else they need, is just naive thinking. So, yeah, just FYI, here we go. Then we have the story on Get Over It. United Kingdom reports, time to move on from ClimateGate. A new report by a United Kingdom House of Commons committee maintains some reservations about previous investigations into ClimateGate. The leaking of thousands of emails between climate researchers. Despite these reservations, the committee recommends moving on from the scandal. Now, what was happening was, and we had kind of hit a little close to home here because a lot of it came out of University of Arizona here in Tucson, is that the Climate Gate was, WikiLeaks thing, prior to a lot of the other stuff that was coming out, that WikiLeaks got hold of this and distributed all of the communications between a lot of these scientists on global warming. And it was found that they were just kind of making it up as they were going along. And they were open about it. They're talking about it. Except you read these things and you go, oh, when this happened, some people that we've had on the air before, and professors at ASU and U of A, we tried to get them on. No, they didn't want to play, as I suspected. But what are they saying in the United Kingdom here? They're going, yeah, there are some concerns here, but, we need to move along. Doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. All right. That's how they want to play. Bank of America's Countrywide is being sued. It's accused of massive fraud. Bank of America Corp's Countrywide mortgage unit has been sued by investors claiming that they were victimized in a massive fraud when they bought mortgage-backed securities. And I'll tell you why. It's real simple. They were supposed to be mortgage-backed securities. They weren't. That was just what they called them. So the fraud is that they were legal to begin with. Well, because they didn't do all the paperwork and all this kind of stuff. They weren't. Of course, this was eventually going to come out. Now, while they're still trying to allow them to foreclose on them and so on, here we have another case where investors, that large investors, could be big pension funds and even states and municipal corporations and so on, they are coming out and saying, no, we want our money back. Well, what is the evidence they're going to use in this? The same evidence they're going to try to ignore and just sweep aside to allow Bank of America to be able to foreclose on people. So which way is it going to go? I'll tell you which way it's going to go. It's very simple. Government is not there to play by the rules. They just make it up as they go along. If nothing else is learned from this, that one thing is worth paying attention to. Yep. Stay right there. We're going to be learning about Bradley Manning and what he's suffering when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. And my guest, let me get his name right here, David McMichael. He's going to be telling us everything that he knows, and he was the commander of the facility he's being held in. So this will be interesting. You guys stay right there.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readersoffreedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readersoffreedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Toured.